Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by PASA Sustainable Agriculture. Register to attend PASA's 31st annual conference by January 28th at pasafarming.org/conference.
You're listening to Season 2 of Fields, the podcast, with Melissa Metrick, Wythe Marshall, and Allie Wist.
On Fields, we're bringing you the stories of people who are working in the world of urban agriculture. For money, for fun, for art, for justice, to feed the hungry, to green the city, or to uncover its history.
In each episode of Fields, we'll delve into one kind of food that's grown in cities, one technology used to grow food, or one project that teaches us something about our relationship to farming in urban environments.
Moreover, we'll investigate all the whys behind getting up in the morning and working as a farmer today.
You don't need to be a farmer to enjoy this podcast, or even a foodie.
We're going to tell fascinating stories and break down the realities and possible futures of urban farming to their elements, examining each in turn.
One note, we've been working on this podcast for a while now, taping a lot of interviews with wonderful farmers and other experts. That means that some materials predates COVID-19. We're still including it because these conversations are as important as ever, maybe more so.
Thank you so much for listening. We're here with Tyran Lewis from Hero Urban Farming.
My name is Tyran Lewis. I'm the founder and CEO of Hero Urban Farming. And I started this back in 2018. I started with 10,000 square feet, and I have 4 acres. And what we do is we provide sustainable, healthy produce to those who need the most, and those people that's in food deserts or food apartheid communities.
How did you get started? So when did you start an urban farm, and why did you start an urban farm?
Wow. Okay. So of course, I didn't start off as a farmer. I got my background is in education. I was a teacher. I was a physical education teacher and a health teacher for the city of St. Louis and a couple other districts. So altogether, I probably got over 12 years with just substitute teaching and teaching. I did that first initially. Then, went on and got my master's, and I was a manager at a car wash. I was assistant GM at Five Guys. And then one day, to be honest with you, I was vegan at one time. This is back 2017. And I wanted some fresh produce. So I'm just lucky enough in my community, I do have a grocery store that's in my surroundings. But when I went in there, I wasn't happy with what I saw. I mean, I was seeing it was the selection of fresh produce was bare. It was scarce. Didn't look as intriguing as I wanted to look. So I said, you know what? Let me go somewhere else. So I went to Lindle. Oh, by the way, it's the same food chain grocery store, too. It's a local grocery store that's here. So I went to the same chain. I went to like Midtown, it's on Lindell, if you're familiar with St. Louis. I went there. It was better, not quite what I expected. It was way better than where I came from. So I'm like, you know what? Something told me like I should just turn this to a field trip and just go further and further out. So I went to the suburbs in Clayton. Went there, a lot better. I mean, they had fresh produce everywhere. Like, it's not even a hard decision to make, right? So I took one more step and went to the super suburbs, what I call it. So I went out to West County. And when you go out there, like the same chain now, the store didn't even look the same, just the structure, just how it's built. I'm like, man, this look more fancier, just with the structure. So I walk in, I was like, I see a winery. I didn't know they even have wineries at this chain. Then you got sushi, people cooking live food, just everybody, just intriguing. You know, it's entertainment. You come in, that's what I call it. You smell all the different smells and everybody. I'm like, man, it's weird. Like, why it's not like that in my community? I mean, we like good stuff and nice stuff, too. People where I live at, why can't we have that? So I just told myself I want to do something about it. And I did, that was 2017. And when I started, I actually just started growing food for me and my family. I mean, we just, I was just growing stuff. It was some vacant lots across the street. And it's LRA property. I think that stands for Land Revitalization Association, I think. But anyway, I purchased three plots. It was three houses that was built in this plot. and I purchased for $5 for 5 years. It's a garden lease, as long as you grow food. So I did that. And then, you know, people start talking to me, asking me questions. People I never talked to ever when I lived out. I was there 3 years prior to that, and no one was really speaking to me. So, you know, everybody was standing to themselves. But they was talking to me, asking me questions, asking me what I'm growing, what I'm doing, and all that. So I started answering them questions. And, man, I seen light bulb went in my head, basically. I was like, wow. So people want this stuff. You know, it's a demand for this. I just didn't need somebody to supply it. And that's what I did, basically. I started from there.
That's so cool. That's really cool that in just a few years, you were able to go from, like, I'm going to do something for myself, my family, to, like, it's a farm business, right? Like, this is, are you full-time today?
Yeah, yeah. I went full-time officially last year. Kind of forced to do it, really. COVID happened. At the time, I was teaching at a school district, and they kind of got me out of retirement because I was just subbing. And they was like, man, these kids like you. I was there for a month assignment back in, like, October 2019. And they was like, man, you just stay for the whole school year. The kids like you. I mean, it's rarely we get subs that, you know, used to be teachers. I'm like, all right, I'll do it. So I did it. March came along. COVID came, you know, all that stuff happened. I'm like, you know, I'm just going to go. And I was still at Five Guys, too. The Five Guys kind of laid me off, too. Basically, cut my hours. So I was like, all right, so I'm going to do this, you know, full-fledged. And I did. And it's crazy because COVID, like, you know, sometimes, you know, you find gems out of bad situations. You know, even diamonds, you know, got to go through the fire, you know, to be shiny. So during the pandemic, you know, people can start being more, you know, interested in growing food, you know, about the importance of food. And that just kind of like helped me out, really. This opportunity came. People was really paying attention to this stuff. And I just, you know, everything just rolled in like that.
That's awesome. I mean, you know, yeah, you got to do something positive out of COVID in general. And so why not, you know, start a farm or go full time? What does the name mean? Does it mean anything? What is Heru?
Heru means king liberator. So my spiritual name is Heru Dejedi Adeleke. That means the crown triumph through the strength of a king. So I got that name back in 2018. So basically, with my name, my business, Heru, basically I liberate my people through food. I liberate the people through food. That's basically what I'm doing, you know. Liberate people, making them feel better, teaching them, educating them. You know, it's more to it than just the selling piece. You know, it's outreach piece to it as well. You know, for example, I got some workers right now. I'm thankful that I was able to hire my first full-time employee that I'm actually paying instead of, you know, paying under the table, things like that. So I'm actually going to pay somebody now. And that was helped through the UMS. I was an accelerator, too. I was an UMS DEI program. And that was first time black entrepreneurs, and they gave us $50,000, you know, and then that helped, you know, it helped with some capital that I didn't have, you know, purchasing a lot of equipment like Caterpillar tunnels, getting me a worker, you know, things of that nature. Also SLATE, which stands for St. Louis Agency for Training and Employment. Yeah, got that right. So that's in St. Louis. And basically they pay the youth 17 to 27 years old to work for you. And, you know, it was a lot of people I know was also worked for SLATE when they was kids. They was younger. So they give me 10 workers. So that's cool. But the thing about that is, you know, you employing a youth, and a lot of them live in the community that need, you know, they need help or whatever and assistance. But not only that, you know, it's not even just the growing food piece. It's just the mentoring piece, you know, just talking to the youth, you know, getting to know them. They talking to you. They feeling comfortable with you. You know, just every day just talking, you know, so I like that more than anything is, you know, building a rapport with the youth, you know, and really getting to know them and know, you know, how they operate and, you know, what type of, help they need. So I like that part of it more than anything.
That's cool. So I think that's a good point that, like, in terms of helping urban farms, like, something you need to get going was just a little bit of capital to make it a full-time business, make it successful. Mm-hmm. And that like made a difference. So these accelerators, like, I mean, that sounds very transformative anyway for someone getting going in urban farming to be able to access, you know, the tools they need really to grow at a scale where they can sell. And I guess, I don't know. I'm just curious about that transition and how did you develop the farm business? And I saw on your site, it looks like you were doing CSA or community supported agriculture. So I was just kind of curious about the business and how you got operating and how it's working today for you. And maybe, I don't know, Melissa or Ali, if you guys have sort of follow-on questions to that, but.
All right, cool. So I guess I'll start from the beginning. I was actually in 3 accelerators to get me where I'm at right now. So the first accelerator I was in back in 2018, it was Balsa Foundation. So that was cool, but that was like a startup, you know, for all startup companies. And I just had a plan and an idea. You know, I didn't really have nothing going on then. So I went in there. They helped me start off. And that was just good for the point that I was at, the stage I was at with my business. After that, I had an accelerator called WePower. And that was in 2020. I think it was 6-month program. That was cool. That was good from the time I was in. They kind of helped me. I got my website together with them, helped me, get some legal advice, helped me with my marketing, helped me set up, all my behind the scenes paperwork stuff that you need to start a business. So that was cool. So then after that, WePower was for first time entrepreneurs as well, Black and Latinx. And that was cool. And then I was in another one with the UMSL. That was first time Black entrepreneur one with getting that chunk of money. So I that was cool. I kind of like I'm part of history back to back, I guess. So being a part of 2 accelerators for first time, I was just blessed just to be in that situation. You know, the universe just looked out for me. So I did all that just to help me, build my structure. So then, when you talk about the CSA is one ways how we make money, which that stumbled on me too. I wanted to stay away from CSAs, but then COVID kind of made that happen because, you got people in the house, so I did a lot of deliveries. I had like 19 deliveries, so I had to just adjust. So I made my adjustments. But the cool thing about my CSAs is, which is a community supported agriculture, which is basically a food subscription. My customers, so that's a lot of farmers like that because it's upfront money. They pay it upfront, and you get like mine goes for 12 weeks. So every Friday they get accumulation of what I harvest, and it goes in like a mesh bag, like a mesh grocery store bag that you get, like Aldi's or something like that. So I stuff it up with that. And but what's cool about it is every 5 I sell, I donate to a family in need. So I think that's cool. So basically that's kind of like help out everybody a little. Cause sometimes that money up front, you can get more of your suburban customers that get that. But that helps out the people that's in food apartheid neighborhoods, because every 5 I sell, they get one. So that kind of like I create like an ecosystem, I guess, help everybody out. So I'm excited about that. We're gonna roll that out in June, actually. The CSA started in May, but June's when the donated 12-week period started, when that's when everything, which is June now. So we'll be rolling out, not this Saturday, but next Saturday. And we'll start doing that with the families. So I'm excited about that. Also, we sell at farmers markets as well. So Thursday, we harvest for Friday, which is the CSAs. And Friday, we harvest for farmers market. So with farmers market, I'm excited. It's a new farmers market that's on the north side in a food apartheid community. And it's called Be Well Farmers Market. And it's on 2027 Salisbury here in St. Louis. So that's cool. This will be the 5th week coming up this Saturday for that. So I'm excited about that. I sell to North Surah Food Hub, which is I like that. That's run by Hosco Foods. And actually one of my farm locations is on Confluence Farm. So everything they grow goes to North Surah Food Hub. And North Surah Food Hub, they sold over 250, well, not sold, they fed over 250,000 families last year during COVID. So, I sell them produce too. Then if I have some left over, I sell like some local restaurants, small business, things of that nature. That's basically how the business run, And like I say, a lot of my capital came from accelerators and grants. So I wrote my own grants, and networking, I think all that plays in the part. You gotta know people, network with people, that's important. You know how they say it's not about what you know, but who you know. And that's true. Most of the time, now I'm doing that. I've been tightening up my skills as well. So I done took permaculture classes, herbalism classes, even though it's in my bloodline by me being a 5th generational farmer, so it's in my bloodline, but I still got to hone my skills too, and make it a little better. And I'm always learning, my dad always told me, if you ain't learning, you did, cause you always got to learn no matter what. A kid could teach you something just like an old person could teach you something. So, you always learn. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But it is interesting. It sounds like a lot of stuff is new that's happening, But as you said, you're a fifth generation farmer, and you're in what I think of as, I mean, I know St. Louis is a big city, but I mean, the surrounding region has got to have a lot of farms, right? So it seems like there's this tension between, you know, large agrarian farms and some new ideas, new access to capital, new access to these accelerators, training, and this focus on supporting local smaller farms, maybe urban farms. So I don't know. That's just kind of a reflection. I guess my question is, you know, I guess I have two questions there. One is like, what is it like to be a fifth generation farmer? And you weren't initially a farmer, so you're kind of coming back into that identity, it sounds like, a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, is that something you reconnect with in terms of people in your family or like local farms around? And then separately, you know, follow up is like, what's going on with this movement? This support, is that new or is that just, you know, it's new to you, but it sounds like there's a lot of support now for the local food movement. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily just in St. Louis, but, you know, that sounds really dynamic.
Yeah. So, interesting. So like with me being a fifth generation of farmer, it's funny because I didn't know that till 2018. I mean, I knew my family grew food. I mean, my great grandma was growing food in our backyard. But she's my great grandma. So when I was born, she was already, she died at 101. So she was like, I knew she had gardens and stuff, but she wasn't really doing it when I was born. But I knew we were sharecroppers, things of that nature. You know, I knew all that, but I didn't know to what extent, you know, until I started what I was doing. That's why it's funny how stuff always come right at the right time. But so I was down at the family reunion, and then I was talking, you know, I seen articles and stuff they was talking about. Man, my great uncle, which is my great grandma brother, he was in 1939. He was a part of an all black co-op down in Lamar County in Paris, Texas. Now this is 1939 in Texas, like that's kind of unheard of at that time, you know. And they purchased, I believe, 24 acres, and all they grew was tomatoes. You know, that was their co-op. Then him and his son, Minor Washington, and his son Ernest Washington, from 1950 to 52, in Texas State Fairs. They won first and second place in probably every bean or pea category from 50 to 52. Popcorn, watermelon, corn, whatever, crowder peas, black hull peas, I mean purple hull peas, black eyed peas, like they ran that. So I was like, wow, they like first and second in everything. And sometimes they switch. Sometimes the son had first and the daddy had second. So I was like, man, that's cool. So that's significant to me. I kind of like build my confidence, really. And you know, it's like a spiritual aspect to it too. So I ask for their help. You know, I believe in altars. I got ancestor altars, money altars too. But, you know, I believe in that. So I pull my libations and, you know, call on them to help me, you know, when I need some help. And they always right on time. So, you know, a lot of people around me say I got the touch. So, man, like some stuff I don't even know what I be doing. Like I took a permaculture class and I was telling them like, yeah, I remember when I first started, I ain't seen no bees. So I put some sunflowers there. And some roses. I'm like, man, I guess the bees are coming to get on that and get on my food. You know, and I took Q-tips and I ain't know what was the male or the female then, but I was taking it and doing this. And, you know, then I went to class, told them, like, man, you was doing permaculture. You didn't even know. They're like, yeah, I mean, this just made sense to me. I mean, ain't no bees here. Put some flowers, they're going to bring the bees. Okay, there we go. It's not germinated. It's not, cross-pollinating from. I'm a cross-pollinated myself. I'm going to take a Q-tip and do it. Yeah, I just think that just makes sense. But, So just stuff like that is just natural. And then when you said you made reference to support beforehand, it wasn't really that much support. Well, the thing with St. Louis is it's like the resources too. Like some people got to know the resources. So sometimes there be resources out there, but nobody know about it. So we got to have somebody to tell you, right? And I think more people have been paying attention because of the COVID. I think that helped it out. And it is accelerating things out there, but I think it really got big within the last year or two, just me, for my opinion. I just came at the right time, you know, and that's all I'm going to attribute that to, for real, just the right time. So, it's a national thing right now, you know, people just being more consciously aware of what they eat, what they put in their body, and things of that nature.
I have a quick question in reference to that. So on your website, it says that 84% of the crops that, like, of the farms around where you are, 84% of those farms pretty much are growing corn and soy, and most of that is going to animal feed. So yeah, where do you find Hayru Farm kind of opposing that or doing something different, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's with urban farmers, too. Like, everything, like, it's local, you know. I mean, it's the best source, your local urban farms, you know, because you're getting the food that's right in your climate, in your area. We don't have to ship it nowhere. It's fresh. And man, that tastes, that's like night and day taste. That what really got me to love it. When I first tasted some lettuce that I grew, man, I ain't know lettuce had a taste to it. I mean, like, really, man, when I bit my first tomato that I grew, oh man, just the taste alone. Like, why wouldn't you want something that's local and fresh and something you get? But that's a good thing. Like, yeah, 84% of the farmland here, food here is used for animal feed and food processing. That's basically corn or whatever else they use to feed, you know, they livestock. Most of our food comes from over 12,000 miles away. So that's places like California, you know, Texas, stuff like that. You know they gotta harvest it early just to make it come here on time and all that. So the quality is not the same because it's coming from so far away. Less than 1% of the food grown in Missouri stays in Missouri for people to eat. So that's less than 1%. So I think the urban farmers, you know, they filling that gap, filling that niche, you know, that's needed, you know. What else is a crazy stat I heard? Yeah, like over 700,000 people in the metropolitan area, in the city of St. Louis, don't have sustainable food within a half mile of their neighborhood. And if it does, like where I live, it does. However, comparing that to the same grocery store in a better, well-to-do neighborhood is going to be night and day as well. So, you know, so yeah, all that plays a part in it. And like I say, with food apartheid, like I said, I think the difference between food apartheid and food desert is naturally. No, that's natural. We think about desert, you know, just the common sense of the word, desert, natural. So food apartheid is done deliberately. Like, we got a gas station on every other corner, and all they do is sell processed foods. Like that's the grocery store, especially if you don't have transportation. Or your Family Dollar and your Dollar General, another canned stuff, you know, frozen stuff. You know, and they try, you know, Dollar General, you know, they got stuff that's in there that's vegan or whatever, but, you know. I'm not gonna shoot them down like that because that's not really what they do, food. But they know it's no grocery stores around here, so hey, I might as well sell some food. I mean, that's just part of the game. I mean, that's a good move for them. But they initially was selling food, but they know, like, we in a neighborhood, they don't have a grocery store. They go in the gas station to get it anyway. We might as well sell it too. And actually, Dollar General, you probably get better stuff in there than you would a gas station. But yeah, so all that's going on, all that play a part in it, you know, what's going on. So I just feel like, you know, if I could just help out just a little bit in my own little way, then I could make it a little better.
This episode is brought to you by PASA Sustainable Agriculture. For 30 years, PASA's conference has served as a springboard for transformative food system change. PASA's 2022 conference features more than 30 virtual and 90 in-person sessions on farming and food systems, covering topics that include building community food webs, keeping seeds to preserve cultural traditions, protecting local watersheds, as well as production methods and business skills for food producers of all levels. Keynote speakers include Soulfire Farms' Leah Penniman, author of Farming While Black, Sarah Mock, author of Farm and Other F-Words, and Jessica Gordon Nemhard, author of Collective Courage, A History of African-American Cooperative Economic Thought and Practice. PASA's virtual pre-conference takes place January 4th through 28th. Register anytime to attend live or get recordings. You can also join PASA in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on February 10th through 12th for its in-person main conference. Comprehensive COVID safety measures will be in place. Learn more and register at pasafarming.org/conference. That's PASA farming.org/conference.
You articulate the difference between a food apartheid and a food desert, which I think is really important for our listeners and really important in terms of the role of urban farms. And you spoke a little bit about this in terms of how you networked in your own community and also how you can leverage the capital coming from suburban communities to then be able to provide more food. But broadly, what is your kind of vision for how urban agriculture can transform urban communities, and how could it play a role in social justice movements kind of broadly?
Yeah, so I think it like I said, with the numbers I just sped off about, you know, about we got good farmland here. Like, most of our stuff just, you know, go to animals and stuff like that. I think the urban farms is more suitable, I guess, for inner city, because it's right there, local farmers markets. You're getting the food from your city, from your community. And that helps out in a lot of ways. I mean, it helps out, of course, economically, because you can try to, you know, create some jobs. Also, the health will be better. You got the fresh produce and it's local, you know, what else? And then, like me, I do honey, too. So I do the bees. And, you know, and that's healthy, too, because, you know, you got the bees in your zip code and your city where you at. So I just think all around it just help health. It'll help, you know, just positive energy, you know, bring life to where you at. Just a little simple stuff like that. Bring a build community. People talking to each other. You know, Farmers Market, you get a lot of conversations going, you know, and people just coming in and getting like example, when I started my garden, nobody was even talking to me, you know, like, and I started that, people talking to me now. You know, like that alone, you know, people coming to me saying, man, the energy different, you know, stuff like that. I think that's more important than even, or just as important as even the food, is just building rapport with your fellow neighbor and, you know, and putting a face on people, eyes on people, you know, people that you overlook. You know, I take it from that angle. And yeah, I just think we just need, I'm an advocate for small pocket farming, you know, urban farming, small pocket, you know, farmers markets, knowing where your food come from, you know, even community, hopefully that'll lead to community led grocery stores. You know, I know we got groups here and locally that's talking about stuff in Fairground Park and neighborhoods like that. We need community ran grocery stores or food hubs, however you want to call it or design it. But I think the community should have a piece of that too as well. I think that design might start showing its head, and you know, and you could probably knock off those chain grocery stores. All they're about is the buck. And see if we can change that. And, you know, I don't have all the answers, but to me, that feels good and it seems right. So, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of, it's kind of interesting because you mentioned, like, in your past and your ancestors, how they were a part of co-ops, like farm co-ops and things like that, and also the idea of possibly, like, the supermarket co-ops, right? So we definitely want to ask you about, like, you know, next steps and like the future of your farm and things like that. But have you also thought about kind of going into that realm as well, into that realm of co-ops? It sounds like you have a lot on your plate, honestly, yeah. Like already. Like, oh yeah, my God, man. Like the CSA and the farmer's yeah. market and uh-huh. the bees and the honey. You got a lot going on. Definitely have a lot going on. But have you thought about kind of going into that realm as well, like in the future of like doing some kind of farm co-op or food co-op, like a supermarket co-op or something like that?
Yeah, I thought about it. And yeah, I am busy, man. But it's all good, though. It's a good busy. But I guess I'm kind of part of a farm co-op now, if you want to, in a certain way. I'm here with farming, but I'm farming on Confluence Farms. And Confluence Farms, all they food go to North Sarah Food Hub. But I sell to them as well. You got growing people growing food that's on that location. She got like a healing. She got like a labyrinth. She grows things, and she is like she got a lot of. She does stuff with women and you know healing type of things. I just you know moved my watermelon operation to that site as well. So I don't have three locations. I have two. So I guess I'm kind of doing that now right over there, right? So yeah. So that's that. You know, co-ops. I'm not opposed to it. I definitely thought about that as well. You know, neighborhood ran grocery stores, and I supply, or me and some other farmers supply to that grocery store. But also, what I'm doing, man, I'm trying to build a family thing too. So I got my little cousin working for me. My nephew gonna start working for me next week. So I'm trying to build that too as well. And my end game is I want a homestead for real. So that will probably be not at least somewhere, but not more than 100 miles out the city. And my food is still come here, but I need space. You know, I need some rural space. So I would like ideal for me to have a homestead with 50 acres, grow my veggies, my watermelon, have retreats there. You know, spiritual retreats there. Have my my nursery there. You know, have my fruit trees and people come and pick them yourself. Like that whole little feel, you know, that's how I want it, like, really, you know, like that. Have my chickens. I have livestock. I have my chickens, goats, my sheep. Might not do cow, but, you know, sheep and goat, for real. I wanted to do goat and chicken this year. I'm just so busy, I can't do it right now. But I'm going to do it, though. That's next on my plate. I just can't be stretched thin. But yeah, but that's what I really want to get into, that, like, be a full-fledged farmer, you know? So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, that all sounds awesome. And I imagine some of it is, just like you're saying, like getting access to land. Like if you had more land and you like owned it or had a long-term lease or whatever, a good deal, yeah, is different, I imagine. Tell me if this is right, than having 2-3 plots and, yeah, you know, it's less stable. So I imagine that's also part of that idea of like, what does it take to have an urban farm? We have to have access to land. You know, how could people support? Well, they could, you know, land trust could work to get new farmers access to land.
Yeah.
So some of these things are trying to think like, what from your experience, you know, what can farmers in other cities learn basically from what you've been able to accomplish? Because it sounds like you've been able to do a lot in a short period of time and are having a lot of fun, which I think is really important. You know, you can just hear.
Yeah, definitely.
and that you have all these plans for expansion. So yeah, I don't know. Like, would you have any sort of tips for urban farmers, people interested in, you know, whether it's amateur moving toward professional, you know, what are some things they should sort of look out for? You know, okay, do's, don'ts.
Well, first and foremost, you want to grow what you like and what you eat, you know, make it fun, you know, what you like to eat, what you're comfortable with. So we start there first and start small. Don't go big because it'll catch up with you. You go too far ahead. It's good to have your big dreams and all that, but especially if you don't have any help or you got that much help, trust me, start small. It's going to be enough. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to waste any food either, right? So that's that. But advice I get is, like I said, my situation is different. I don't know if all cities like this, but figure out, like, what's your accelerators out there? You know, it's accelerators. I know St. Louis is big on accelerators, but I know other cities might have them too for entrepreneurs, first-time entrepreneurs. See what's up with, like, search around. Like, normally, your local universities usually have the connections with the accelerators or, you know, things like that. So I'll do your research on that. Probably check into your local small business, I guess like your SBA or whatever like that, and try to figure out what accelerators out there. That's number one. Look into grants. There's a lot of grants over there. There's a lot of grants that you don't have to pay back, you know, things of that nature. So look into grants, you know. If you need some workshop to tighten up on your skills or writing grants, you can do that. You know, I didn't have no training in grant writing. I just had the confidence that I can do it. I mean, I just did it. I mean, what else gonna happen? I mean, either I'm gonna get it or I'm not. Networking is about who you know. Like, go to these events, go visit other farmers that's local to you. Visit some, do some community service at some local urban gardens or urban farms. Well, I think if anybody grow food as a farm, I call gardening when you just got flowers. So you growing food, you can have 2 squash plants. You a farmer to me. So go check out that. You know, get your hands dirty. The first one know if that's really what you want to do. You know, so you want to go and volunteer and help out. So I think, you know, to be honest with you, it's as simple as that. To me, like, networking by who you know, find out what accelerators is out there that you could join, look into some grants, volunteer, do some outreach work. And then, you know, in one of those circles, you'll find be some opportunities in there. You'll learn something. And then, yeah, start from there.
That's awesome. I love the idea that, yeah, anyone growing food as a farmer, you don't have to worry too much about these labels.
Yeah. You grow food, man. You farm it. I don't care. You got it in buckets, you know. Yeah, you disrespecting the plant, man.
Yeah, I wonder, I mean, because, you know, Melissa, your farm's pretty small at NYU, right? I mean, I don't know, like, this whole question of, like, who's a farmer, who's a gardener, I feel like it comes up all the time. Like,
you know, it's interesting. It's small, but right now I'm really late in planting everything. So I'm like, it's big right now. Yeah. It's really big. Once you have all that space, you're like, and you got to plant everything and harvest everything. Yeah. You're like, you know, small is kind of relative. Like, it's right now, it seems really big.
Yeah.
Especially if you're kind of behind.
Yeah.
But,
that's why I told people to start small when you've been messing with food, man. Trust me. And sometimes you can put too much on your plate. And then, so, yeah, just start small. You know you can do that. Get your confidence up. Then you can move on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. Well, I think I always have more questions, but like one question I had to go from the small to the big is, you know, what thoughts would you have on, like, just broadly the whole nation, the whole world, like what should be done? What are some bigger ways, like, politicians could help, the average, you know, the average shopper could help? Like, you talked about some real systemic divides in neighborhoods, you know, in geography, in terms of not just, as you said, food access, but like the experience of food and the look even of the stores, you know, that kind of infrastructure. I mean, that's ultimately also about, you know, access to capital, and stuff that goes back years and years. But I mean, do you have any broader thoughts or things you'd like to see, or anybody that's inspired you? I mean, you could take the question however you want. I'm not putting you on the spot to like solve all of America's food problems, but you know.
Mm. Wow. Oh, that's a good question. First thing I'd like to say, support local, you know, it's like, you know, when you go into farmers markets and things of that nature, you know your farmer, you know their practices, you know, I do organic practices. So, you know, I don't use any pesticides, nothing like that. I like using beneficial plants to bring in beneficial bugs, to eat the bad bugs, you know, stuff like marigold, you know, mint, rosemary, Irish spring soap in a sock and keep the raccoons out. Sunflowers, you know, they bring in, you know, your beneficial bugs or little stuff like that. So just know your farmer, you know, support local. You know, to me, I mean, it was a saying to say, life is easy, it's understood wrong. And I really believe that, you know, it's just real simple, you know, just do like you know what's right or wrong, right? But sometimes, you know, I know certain circumstances, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But, you know, if you know something not right, for example, like I was telling you about the same grocery store that in my neighborhood and you go out to the suburbs night and day. If you know that, you know, you should, you know, hold them accountable for it. You know, like why, is, you know, people, we need other people other than the people that's suffering from it to speak up. And I think it's getting there. You know, we got a lot of work, but it's still getting better. So, so I think we need a voice of the people that's not getting done to, you know, and they can talk and then like, okay, so they tell me so they can see them and hear them and they can look at that, you know. It's a lot of things, you know. It's the politics, you know, politicians, for example, your local politicians, the ones that allow certain businesses to come in. So if you know that we got a gas station two blocks up, right, you can put another one. Like right across there. That stuff's like that don't make sense. So I don't know. If you know it's not any grocery stores locally, try to help the community build a community ran grocery store. Like, you know, we need to help too. And most of the stuff is funded, really, and who you know and what kind of resources you have. So no, do I have all the answers? Nah, you know, but you know, just certain stuff just makes sense, you know. And we don't have to overthink it, you know. Like I say, life easy is understood wrong. You know, you put too much energy in overthinking, I think.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'd vote for you for one if you won. If I lived in St. Louis, you were running for something. But you know, that makes me think, because you're doing all this on your, it sounds like a lot of it's on your own with support now, which is great. But, you know, is it also connecting with other farmers and rediscovering as a community about food and trying to connect with, you know what I mean? Like talking to your customers, but also other farmers and, I don't know, maybe some sort of shift where, you know, is there some alliance or are you part of like local, you know, groups of farmers? Like, have you joined, you know, Young Farmers Coalition and anything like that?
Oh, cool.
Are you interested in anything like that? You know what I mean?
I am a part of
It sounds like you are.
Yeah, I'm a part of Known and Grown. So it's an organization here that focuses on, you got to be a local farmer, no matter if it's urban, you know, rural, within 100-mile or 50-mile radius, I believe. Of St. Louis, so it was a lot of, and they've been doing a lot, man. They helped us with marketing. They put us out there, you know. They give us tips and hook us up with Missouri Extension. So they do a lot for us, you know. But it's putting us out there and just supporting the things we need and collaborations, you know. I might have something, another form of growth I don't have, you know. We do stuff like that, barter and things of that nature. So that's cool. I'm also part of Slow Food St. Louis, you know. So that's, you know, we focus on locally, local products. That could be from anything from meat, vegetables, fruit, whatever, just local business, local stuff from here. So we focus a lot on that. So I'm part of that organization too. Also, outside of those two, we do collab, we do get help. Like, I got organizations like Evolve, that's a nonprofit, that help us out. Tasha Phoenix run that. She helped me out with a lot of resources, throwing resources my way for me to, you know, get grants. I learned from farmers that can influence farms. I mean, I learned from, you know, we got other farmers that motivate me, like Ujima. I can't think of the sister name that's on the east side right now. She's going to kill me. But yeah, it's different farmers motivate me, and we work with each other, too. So yeah, it's definitely a lot of that going on right now.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, you know, we've asked about, you know, their how you're involved in community and things like that, and all the resources that you've had and all the help you've had. But it's really interesting just to hear your story as an entrepreneur, as creating this business, this farming business in general. And also just, it is kind of interesting to hear about how you were a teacher and how you're like bringing that in and kind of teaching the youth as well, but also just your overall kind of business and system and everything that you have going on, and how much work you've actually done, you know, like, without, you know, yeah, sure, you've had all these resources and things like that, but like how much you are doing, like you are doing a lot, which just sounds really incredible. And just all the work that's put into it, but also that positive kind of energy that you kind of are putting into it, and this kind of the energy just to kind of do it and keep on expanding and all these other things. So it's also just really great just to hear your story as an entrepreneur, the work that you're doing, the business that you've created in like kind of a small amount of time. Right. So it's kind of really incredible just to hear this in general. So personally, I just wanted to say, or for Fields, thank you for sharing that with us.
Man, gratitude. Yeah. Gratitude. Yeah. I don't even think of it. I mean, it's days where it is rough, you know, it's hard. But I'm not sure. Like, my dad was a hard worker, so you know, it just come natural. Yeah. So just try to do what I can do. That's all. But thank you.
Yeah, and I think you know, I mean, one thing that occurs to me is, you know, I don't know much about St. Louis, but I'm very curious, and it seems like there is this thriving ecosystem. So if there's other folks you think we should talk to. I mean, we live in New York, so we basically started the show there, but, you know, we're happy to talk to the other people. So if you think there's people doing cool work, or, you know, can highlight other aspects of this convergent or confluent, you know, food system where you have different people supporting each other and reconnecting to food production and even in an urban environment, you know, I think I'd definitely be open to that and be curious to hear what else is going on and, you know, have you back on. But yeah, I guess just to say, thanks for joining us, Tyran Lewis of Heyru Urban Farming in St. Louis. And yeah, where can people find you if they want to know more? What's the best way to connect, both if they're in St. Louis and if they're just like a curious, you know, curious person in New York, somewhere else, they just want to learn more?
Oh yeah, cool. And I will send some people your way too. I like highlighting other people as well. And I want to say thank you for having me as well. It's crazy because like I'm getting a lot of attention and stuff, and I know people need to know about it, but it's really just something I just want to do, you know. So that just is crazy. But anyway, but you can find me at Heyru Urban Farming on all social media sites. That's HERU URBAN Farming, FARMING, and that's on Instagram and that's on Facebook as well. Also, that's my Gmail as well. Also my website. so yeah, that's all that. You reach out to me. If you want to donate to what I'm doing, my Venmo is also at Heyru Urban Farming. Also, my Cash App is Heyru Urban Farming. And PayPal. So there you go. There you go.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. And yeah, when we're able to travel more, you know, I got to go out to St. Louis. We got to have you out here. And yeah, sounds like you're doing big things. By the time I get there, you'll have a bunch of goats.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Hey, if you come this year around August, man, you got to get the best watermelon you ever taste. Come from me, and I'm stunting on it right now. If I don't know nothing else, I know about them watermelons. So I got six varieties, seven or eight of them now. So I got my favorite Moon and Stars. So I got Moon and Stars, I got Jubilee, I got Strawberry, I got Carolina, I got Blacktail, I got Desert King, Crimson. Everybody know about Crimson. That's the your traditional white and green striped one. I got Cantaloupe too. But come try some of this watermelon, man.
Oh man, now I really want to. I don't think I've had most of those. I didn't know the name, but I didn't know there were that many kinds of watermelon, frankly.
Oh man, there's a lot, thousands of varieties, man. Yeah. My favorite Moon and Stars though.
Yeah, I've heard that before. I've never been that lucky with it, but I need to take tips from you. Definitely.
Yeah. My largest watermelon last year ever, it was a Jubilee. It was 44 pounds. My largest Moon and Stars was 33 pounds. Yeah. And I average at like 12 pounds. Like, you know, that's my average.
That's amazing.
There was the largest watermelon. I always got sweet watermelons. It was the largest I grew last year. And I call them miracle watermelons because it was COVID. I ain't had no water. I was hand watering everything out of 250 gallon. Me and my workers was putting them in gallon milk jugs and going up and down the rows, watering them until they germinated. And that worked the crap out of me. But it was a good result. And I definitely reaped what I sowed. Yeah.
Field's theme music is by Sam Tyndall. Our amazing producing engineer at Heritage Radio is Liam Werner.
Field's is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you.
For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org.
Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio and at @fieldspodcast.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you.
Want to be a part of the world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.